This is Resistance Radio, and we are out there on the front lines with you, taking on Skynet out here in the wild, the wild, wild frontier. And we want to hear from you out there doing the hard yards, putting your back into it, getting on, taking on the T-800s and the T-600s and all the T's they got to throw at us. You got to tell us there, folks, what you going to do about it for John Connor. All right, lights, camera, action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, g'day, mate. How you going?
G'day, mate, indeed. How you going? This is Adam O'Brien from the Lethal Mullet Podcast here, recording at Quinlan's Cantina tonight, of course, home in the Lethal Mullet. And we're doing episode number 169, looking at the original, the best, and without a doubt, one that's never really been captured again by the sequels, the one, the only, The Terminator. Yes, directed by James Cameron and starring Arnold, because Arnold's great. He's in this with Michael Biehn. Who you gonna be in, Michael Biehn, when you're not Arnold? That's right. And this is, without a doubt, the most interesting of the films, because it was done guerrilla style for the most part, and it's got some of the great vintage effects of the day, a lot of amazing stuff all in camera for the most part, and of course it is all about Skynet versus the humans, the future war, and of course got a bit of time travel involved in there too, which has always been interesting, and it's been replicated 100 times by other less successful directors and producers. Tonight we're looking at The Terminator, folks, here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. Here's how you can catch this show and many others like it.
G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You'll also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis, and where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe, all here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com, or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fbnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema.
Hi, this is Tom Caldwell from Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network, inviting you to check out our show. Once a month, we release an episode about the films of the great master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock. You can find us on Facebook at Hitchcock Good Evening, on Twitter at Good Evening Pod, and along with myself and Brandon Shane Mutala and Chris Haig, we bring you a fun and friendly show that you can enjoy alongside your viewing of the films of Alfred Hitchcock. On behalf of the program, I wish you good evening.
Hi, mate, how you going? Come on in, mate. Yeah, yeah. What shall it be?
Oh, yeah, man, it's been a real busy day, you know.
Right, I'm
yeah.
Like,
hey. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just like I was telling my mate the other day, you know, having an arse, you know, cold beverage.
Well, here you go, mate. Here, enjoy this beverage and enjoy this film chat.
We've got a lot to cover tonight, folks, so don't use no dojo segment tonight. Yes, we're going to be chatting about 1984's The Terminator. A real groundbreaker when it came to, you know, everything. When it came to science fiction. And, of course, James Cameron really coming out from his days of working on Piranha 2, and of course, working on Battle Beyond the Stars. where he worked alongside James Horner. Obviously different departments, folks, because at the end of the day, it's great to see that those two men would go on to work on so many projects together later on. What's great about this series is that it really is the quintessential robots versus humans, or in this case, the Terminators versus humankind. And, you know, it's artificial intelligence, all the stuff that's very paramount now. But this is not really going to be a history lesson on the series. I'm going to get into straight up what I think of the series and why it works, why some of it doesn't work, and why all of it can tie together. That's right, and it all has to do with time travel. So years ago, Terminator 2 was a big sequel that was being talked about and was often, you know, definitely something that was, you know, huge in the media at the time. Because when you think about it, Terminator was a hit. But when they decided to do another one, which was how many years later it was, 6 years, 7 years later, yeah, they really were pumping up the hype machine for it. It was pretty big, you know. It's like the Marvel of its day, if you like. Terminator was huge. But the thing is, I didn't really know that movie when the sequel came around. I knew of a lot of Arnold's other stuff. I grew up with Predator, Running Man, and Kindergarten Cop, and all that sort of stuff at the time. But it was Terminator 2 that really, I think, punched it through to the next level. Because, I mean, he was, at that stage, pretty much, you know, he was still A-list celebrity, and certainly action star. But Arnold really hadn't gone to that next level, which was, you know, I think the family-friendly one, if you like, which is what they were trying to do with the character of the T-800 in that series, in T2. But there's one thing that I will say straight up. T2 is a retread of the first film, although they switch the roles. The Terminator becomes the human, you know, or the human's hero, if you like this, because it's been reprogrammed. And it is also getting back to closer to what, you know, John Connor was meant to face, really, at the end of the day, which was a Terminator, which was one that could really camouflage itself in a crowd. I mean, the original idea of the Terminator was Lance Henriksen, who would go on to play a robot, of course, in the Alien series, as, of course, Bishop, the android. So it's got all these little cornerstones. But what makes that film work, the biggest thing is, as much as it is Sarah Connor's story, it really is Kyle Reese, because Kyle Reese is our window into both worlds through his flashbacks and stuff like that too. So as the Terminator was, you know, starting to pick up some speed, it was around that time I'd seen little bits and pieces of the Terminator here and there. My parents weren't too keen on me at that age watching the Terminator. They thought it was, oh, it's bloodthirsty, it's, you know, limbs getting torn off and all that sort of stuff. So I did get to see it eventually, but at the time it was, I could see little scenes here and there of Arnold doing this, Arnold doing that, or Michael Biehn in the future scenes in his truck with the big laser minigun or whatever it was. So all those scenes there, and I got used to it. But it wasn't until T2 was kicking in, and that's when it really hit the next level. So for me, the experience is actually pretty close to what I had with Highlander. You know, I didn't know the original films, but by the time I watched the sequel, I went back and watched it. And so with this one, it was, I actually saw the first film on VHS on a pretty shitty copy, to be honest. Like, it wasn't a very good copy. It was all hazy, and you could tell it had been watched and rewound about 1,000 times. But at least I'd seen it and, you know, got to know the, you know, obviously the Resistance and Skynet and, you know, everything that goes within the world of the Terminator, and knew what I was sort of setting up to see in, obviously, this the second one. And that's basically my first viewing of it. It was amazing. It was breakneck pace. I love that it's a road movie. They're constantly moving. You know, I thought it was really innovative the way that James Cameron was able to, through Kyle Reese, you know, get all this exploratory dialogue out, you know, find out about the world. And, you know, everyone thinks in 1984 that he's an absolute lunatic. He's a nutcase, you know, that they, you know, he doesn't know what he's on about. But when Sarah Connor finally realizes that he ain't bullshit, that he's talking about, you know, real stuff, talking about the real future, well, that's where it changes. And obviously, too, you know, she's seen the same way in the second film because of her supposed delusionary ideals of the future. So it's a total, you know, I'm a bit lost for words when it comes to just how ingenious I would say, but I would say just absolutely how groundbreaking it is. You know, it is such a groundbreaking story for the time. Now we kind of take it for granted because if you look at it now, I mean, it's been done by so many other, you know, franchises, you know, and it goes back a ways. You know, I'm a Dune fan, folks, so I do know that in some ways, even if I'm sure Jim Cameron's a Dune fan, come on. I mean, he's somebody that would have easily read Dune. Well, the Butlerian Jihad in Dune is all about man versus machine, the machine revolt, everything. You know, it's all about that, that collision of power of human versus sentient AI, which makes it really interesting. It is about artificial intelligence, that whole story as well. But when you get down to it, it is for the cinema, you know, completely groundbreaking. And we wouldn't have Matrix films or anything to do with, when it comes to those cyborg-like, you know, even Cyborg, Jean-Claude Van Damme. You know, all these other films all come and stem from the biggest, which is the Terminator. So it's an interesting dilemma when you think about that, you know, it was done so well in the first film that none of the sequels, including T2, have been able to really capture what made that film so groundbreaking to begin with. So let's get into the statistics, folks, about what makes this film so great. So, 1984's The Terminator, science fiction, action film, you name it, it's all those things. Directed and written by, of course, James Cameron. And, of course, it's the start of Arnold Schwarzenegger's run as the cyborg killer assassin sent back by the Skynet systems to take out Sarah Connor. And later, John Connor as well. I guess they do that as well. He's set back from 2029 to 1984. His mission, obviously, is to take out the mother of the leader of the Resistance. And, of course, that is Linda Hamilton's role of Sarah Connor. Her unborn son will be the one that will save humankind from, of course, extinction by the AI of Skynet. And, of course, sent back by the Resistance is a soldier by the name of Kyle Reese, freedom fighter that working for, of course, the Resistance, played by, of course, the legendary Michael Biehn. And he's sent back as the protector to protect Sarah. The screenplay itself, of course, done by Cameron, and, of course, Galeanne Hurd, his wife and producing partner at the time, was also co-written by William Wisher. And what's great about it is a simple story, but the story is such a one that is on the run. And, you know, even like Star Wars to a certain extent, it's one that built a universe while they're literally on a mission, on the run. You're building this universe with the audience. You're building it through the dialogue, on the run, and in media res, which is one of the strongest ways to get story across. Cameron had been working on this since the work on his first film, Piranha 2, The Spawning, back in 82, and came up with the idea with William Wisher, in a collaboration with Concept as well. From there, of course, he'd done many other projects, worked on scripts on four, of course, Rambo First Blood Part 2, and, of course, Aliens. But a lot of his work behind the scenes was done in special effects at the time too. A lot of what was happening at the time too was the delay of Schwarzenegger coming off the project of Conan the Destroyer, which was shooting in Mexico at the time, alongside, of course, David Lynch's Dune, all by, of course, Rafaela De Laurentiis and, of course, her father as well, Dino. But, of course, later they would pump out one of the greatest when it comes to action films, this one indeed. And, of course, this is something that, you know, was considered going to be a low-budget, slow-burn sort of a movie, but it went amazingly at the box office and, of course, was the start of what would be several sequels, television series, comic books, toys, novels, video games, and much, much more. All, of course, in the name of The Terminator. And what an amazing series, folks, it really is. So, obviously, we know who it's starring. We're going to be talking a bit more about that in a second. Cinematography was by, of course, the amazing Adam Greenberg, edited by Mark Goldblatt, and, of course, music by Brad Fiedel. That score, folks, still to this day is one that really gets you out there. It was distributed by Orion Pictures. Of course, you remember the Orion logo on the front there, folks. And it was released on October 26, 1984. It runs for 107 minutes and on a budget of $6.4 million, it made $78.3. Somehow, I think that might just be a bit of a success. What do you reckon? So, two time travelers go back to 1984 in search of Sarah Connor. Both of them have come back from 2029. One, of course, is Arnold, or as we know as Arnold, and his scene coming back into, of course, the world from the future is an amazing opening. Of course, you know, he literally topples three punks, one of them being Bill Paxton. Whoa, he's a couple of cans shorter a six-pack, man. Wash day tomorrow, nothing clean, right? And, of course, that other person you would know from, of course, Wrong Bet. And, of course, many other amazing films like Moon 44. We're talking about somebody who I consider to be one of the great character actors out there, Brian Thompson, folks. There you go. Of course, the other coming back is Kyle Reese, played by, of course, one of my favourite actors on the planet, Michael Biehn. And, of course, he's there to stop Sarah Connor. The first hour or so of the film sets up, of course, the two on the lookout for Sarah Connor and, of course, the life of Sarah Connor, played by Linda Hamilton. And Linda's great in this because we get to see her literally grow from being a naive young youth who's just going through the paces of life to one that's a hardened survivor and one that will turn into, of course, literally a soldier herself in the next film. Once Reese finds Sarah and, of course, aborts an attempt on her life by, of course, the T-800, he goes through, of course, what is going to happen in the future in 2029. Talks about everything. Talks about her son, John Connor. Talks about the world of the Terminators and, of course, Judgment Day, the whole thing and how it all breaks down. From here, Reese and Sarah are apprehended by a bunch of police officers, and while they're being held in captivity, Reese talks to Dr. Silberman, which is, of course, the police psychiatrist there, and talks about the future. And, of course, they think he's absolutely nuts. And from there, they think that until, of course, the Terminator turns up and, of course, demolishes the entire police station, kills just about everyone. One of the police in there is, of course, Lance Henriksen as well, folks, which we'll talk about in a sec, too, with the cast. From here, it's literally a run for their lives, and I mean a real run for their lives, as both Reese and Sarah have to get away from the Terminator. It just is unstoppable. The more the Terminator races them, the more the flesh gets burnt off, of course, the endoskeleton, and, of course, that metal indestructible steel that he's made out of, the metal endoskeleton. There you go, it's a mouthful, folks. endoskeleton covered by, of course, living tissue, which we find out later in the series is taken from real humans as well. And, of course, then it is that we find out the Terminator will then at no point be stopped and, of course, will do anything he can to take out Sarah Connor. When they finally go to a big factory and to a face-off with the Terminator, the Terminator is destroyed. Everything except for his computer chip and his arm. And, of course, in the process, Michael Biehn's character, of course, Kyle Reese, sacrifices himself. And, of course, in turn becomes, through his romantic union with Sarah Connor, the father of John Connor. So that's pretty much in a nutshell the film, folks. So let's have a look at about the characters. And it's, you know, it's a pretty interesting cast all up. So Arnold Schwarzenegger as the Terminator, a cybernetic android, robot, a cyborg system, disguised obviously as a huge muscular human, is sent back to take out Sarah Connor. And this really is his iconic role. I mean, he's been back more times than any other character. Although I think he should have taken a paycheck and just gone and done another Conan movie on some of these sequels, but we'll talk about that later. Michael Biehn as Kyle Reese really is the person running this film. He does an amazing job of, you know, what would be, you know, originally Arnold Schwarzenegger's role, because Arnold was interviewed for the Kyle Reese role. Linda Hamilton plays Sarah Connor, the 19-year-old diner waitress, and of course, the target of the Terminator in this. And as I said, she does a fantastic performance, which only gets better in the sequel. Paul Winfield from, of course, Wrath of Khan. That's right. And, of course, Cliffhanger as well, folks. is a police lieutenant in this, and he tries to protect Sarah through the film. Of course, he plays Detective Traxler, Lieutenant Ed Traxler. His partner in crime, of course, is Vukovic, played by Lance Henriksen. He's a member of the LAPD. Then we have Bess Motter as Ginger, which is Sarah's roommate. And, of course, she's brutally murdered by, of course, the T-800. Rick Rossovic from Navy SEALs and Top Gun and many other films, who is a former model turned actor, plays Matt, who's Ginger's boyfriend, and of course, gets smashed around the place and killed by the T-800. And, of course, we have Earl Bowen, who plays Dr. Silberman. And, of course, we see him in the first three films. He's in Rise of the Machines as well as Judgment Day. And, you know, it's great, quite off-center comedic role. It's great. What I love about the character as well is that, you know, he is one that eventually finds he thinks he's in himself. He's nuts as well. Earl Bowen, obviously, he'd worked with James Cameron and Galen Hurd on Battle for the Stars as well, which was just an amazing film. I should correct that. It's called Battle Beyond the Stars, folks, but that is the one that they worked on in that one, alongside John Saxon and many others. Now, it is a strong main cast, but, of course, there's some talent around the place as well. We have, in the film itself, we have Bill Paxton and Brian Thompson, obviously, as the punks. You also have Franco Colombo as the Terminator in the future, who goes around in the camps and starts to lay in waste with that huge 30mm cannon that he's got. Bill Wisher plays one of the police officers that's hit on in the hit and run felony of Reese. And we got Marianne Mulelu as one of the other women named Sarah Connor. So that's the cast in a nutshell, folks, you know. And let's go into a little bit of the background of the movie. So when they were doing Piranha 2, this morning, this is in the release time, Cameron was not feeling well and basically had this nightmare about a metallic torso that had kitchen knives. It was dragging itself basically from this massive fire explosion. And he was also inspired by, of course, John Carpenter after he'd seen Halloween, which is a classic low-budget slasher film. Between that and The Dream, he basically wanted to come up with his version of a slasher film. And from here, you know, Cameron's own agent didn't like the concept of basically a horror sort of film. He said he should work on something else. When he got back to Pomona, California, he was staying with a writer by the name of Randall Frakes, who was a science fiction writer, staying at his home. And this is where he sat down and penned the script for The Terminator. And there were so many different influences that went into it, things like The Outer Limits, The Driver, and, of course, Mad Max 2 as well, which came out only a few years earlier. So it's interesting how that actually comes into play there too, folks. From here, he also got a friend of his, Bill Wisher, to work on it to really bring out the storytelling, the dialogue, all that sort of stuff too. And, of course, that's where we get a lot more of the great work on the dialogue in this film is one of the things that makes it strong. It, in some ways, inspired, I think, you know, whether it's directly or not, by the way that Frank Herbert writes. You know, he's not somebody that really describes things as such, but you get a lot of the story through the dialogue of the characters, exploratory stuff, but definitely comes out. The initial idea was to have two Terminators being sent to the past. The first was similar to the Terminator we see. The second was made of the liquid metal and couldn't be destroyed by any form of conventional weapons. But, of course, at this stage they just did not have the power with computers or effects to get a liquid character right, so they had to wait till T2 to do that. Galen Hurd, of course, who turned out to be his wife at the time as well, also worked on it, the film as well. And what she basically had done is worked with him originally on the Roger Corman work that he did as well. So from there, of course, they went in and started work on what would be the Terminator. For the role of Cole Reese, the production company, and of course Ryan wanted something that was popular or a rising star at the time. And of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger was one of the people they were thinking of, but they were also thinking of O.J. Simpson as well. And that was also amongst others that had actually both turned down the role. And that is, of course, Sylvester Stallone and Mel Gibson. That'd be interesting, wouldn't it? We kind of got an inkling of what a T-800 would look like with, of course, Sylvester Stallone in Last Action Hero. With the funny poster that, of course, Jack Slater sees. From here, Cameron sat down and agreed to a meeting with Schwarzenegger. And, of course, didn't want to originally cast him. He said he'd pick a fight and try and find a way to basically say that he's not ready for the role, should be brought into it. But of course, the two became fast friends and then realized that the actual role it should have been is for the villain, for the Terminator. I mean, he looks like a tank. Not exactly the original idea for the Terminator, which would be, at the end of the day, a completely different thing. So, with those in hand, of course, they started to look at what they were going to do for those ideas. There are other actors that were up for the role, or at least suggested for Reese. Sting was one that was brought up, and others also were Christopher Reeve, Mel Gibson, Matt Dillon, Kurt Russell, Treat Williams, Scott Glenn, Michael O'Keefe, Bruce Springsteen, and Tommy Lee Jones. But Cameron said Michael Biehn. He'd seen Taxi Driver and The Aspirations alongside something like Al Pacino, De Niro, and Redford were, you know, not exactly what he's after. So when he saw this, Biehn was something that, you know, looked honest. And one of the real things about that too is that it would eventually be something that would go on further with it too. And of course, the one thing that's very interesting in this too is that, you know, to get into the role of Reese, Michael Biehn studied the Polish resistance movement from World War II, the underground fighters and stuff like that too. Sarah Connor is very young in this and a pretty character, flawed, but also one that we are sort of seeing as the window into this world as well. And Linda played it extremely well. And obviously, too, what it's interesting is there was other people up for it too. They had Jennifer Jason Leigh, Melissa Sue Anderson, and Jessica Harper are also up for the role as well. Filming began early in Toronto in 1983. But Dino De Laurentiis basically put an option on Schwarzenegger at the time. And this was all due to, of course, Conan the Destroyer. So they had to wait. And in that interim period, Cameron worked on First Blood Part 2, which is the second Rambo movie, doing some script duties. And then from there, too, met with, of course, Walter Hill and, of course, David Giler. And this was all about discussions about what would be the next film after Terminator, which, of course, is Aliens. Arguably one of the greatest sequels ever made, although I will also argue that Alien 3 is just as good, if not better. From here, of course, they basically started to film where they could, and of course that would be all over the place, folks. It's interesting to see that they did everything from doing it guerrilla style in LA and vice versa, and of course a lot of that stuff was stuff they could do on the fly. The 2029 sequences were done stop-motion style, done by, of course, the company Fantasy 2. And one of those was headed by Gene Warren Jr. That stuff still looks amazing today when we see the skulls of the humans crushed by the wheels of the hunter-killers and, of course, the tanks coming past. Just amazing. And one of those things is really, really, really interesting. So a lot of it, too, came down to the weapons of choice in the film, too. Although we won't go into a full gun segment like Kevin Reitzel would like us to, we'll talk about it a little bit. And one of those guns is, of course, the AMT long slide pistol that we see the Terminator hold. And, of course, it had a very early and primitive laser sight on it too that was very, very new to the time. And from there, we also had the Terminators with those huge, huge laser rifles that they had. Of course, we see them better in the second film. Those are actually Coleco submachine guns, which are ones with an interesting magazine concept, a little bit like P90s, which are the magazine is in some type of drum on top of the pistol grip.
those were the basis for, of course, those ones, or at least blank firing editions were done for those as well. It's interesting. Even down to the line that we see the Terminator say, and of course, as he's going to the police station, it says, "Can I see Sarah Connor?" And then he says, "I'll be back." But of course, Arnold wanted to change it because he said it just didn't sound right. "I will be back." But Cameron said no. He refused to change it. And of course, it stayed in the film. And it is what it is. And it's actually become his most quotable line. The soundtrack itself, performed on synthesizer by Brad Fidel, is classic to this day. And of course, it is very simple, elegant, but of course strong and tough. And you know straight away it is the Terminator. Like soundtracks like, of course, Tron, it's very edgy and so dark, but it's also very there in its moment too. There's a lot of 1980s synthesizer rock as well in there too, which is quite good too, but that's the main thing people remember it from too. So it was released in, of course, 1984 and did extremely well, as basically the film company thought they were going to have a very negative critical reception, but it did exactly the opposite. It became a fast hit, and of course, it's without a doubt one of the biggest hits Arnold Schwarzenegger ever made. Really put James Cameron on the path. So, what came in the wake of this massive film? Well, of course, lots. You know, there's a lot of different stuff that came out of it. You know, there's everything from, of course, the franchise itself, making merchandise and stuff like that too, but also the legacy of what it would create. He created a number of sequels, 5 in total so far and counting, and who knows, there'll probably be even more. TV show, which is arguably better than the sequels, called the Sarah Connor Chronicles. And, of course, the fact that we had 2 Linda Hamilton's play by stars of Game of Thrones as well. Interesting. T2, of course, was said to be better and bigger than the original film, but it was a big, huge, massive film, which is not as rewatchable as one would think. It looks great. It's fantastic. I think it's got a little bit too much going on, and it sometimes may need to have at least 25 minutes cut out of it. The director's cut is an even longer trudge through. Although it's not to say I don't like the film. I do like the film. I think in comparison to the first film, it's a bit of a mission to watch. Then we get into the sequels, and of course Terminator 3, which was quite an interesting film. You know, set it up so that we could see what it would be like for John Connor and his coming of age to take on the mantle as the leader of the human resistance. Now, this was one that was part retread of T2 and, of course, uses some of the ideals and motifs that the T-1000 fought with this new Terminatrix character. But it was still an interesting one to watch and had one of the best endings we've had. You know, Judgment Day still happens. And, of course, we get to see John Connor, played by Nick Stahl, in quite a convincing manner become the leader at the end. Again, more comedic in tone than the original, as was set up in T2. Everything got more comedic. Then jumping, of course, to, of course, the McGee-directed Terminator Salvation that, frankly, doesn't get enough love. I think this is a film which went in a little bit half-baked. I mean, they had an idea, a good concept, an idea to go right up to when the battles between the resistance and, of course, humans were happening. And just prior to the humankind taking on John Connor as their resistance leader. It's an interesting one, and it certainly fits that mold of, Apocalypse Now-style film. But the fusion of that and, of course, the two leads, Sam Worthington and, of course, Christian Bale, is an interesting one. It's known more for, of course, Christian Bale's rants on set to a cameraman that got in his way. Then we jump, of course, from here to Terminator 5, which is, of course, Terminator Genesis. And Genesis, again, was trying to take it in a different direction again. These are all alternate futures, folks, which is something I'm going to allude to in our wrap-up in a sec. But again, this one was playing with time travel to bring in into, of course, the original Terminator. So it goes right back. Genesis is interesting in turning John Connor himself into the Terminator, fusing both worlds. And, of course, again, interesting concept,
probably a bit half-baked. And, of course, we've had the most recent one, Terminator Dark Fate, which came out in about 2018. And it itself, too, is a film that definitely plays strong off the originals. It's probably the strongest of the recent sequels. But, again, gets itself confused and, of course, doesn't use Sarah Connor quite as strong as it should. And gets lost in a future which is different than the others and, of course, different characters. This is the one that's actually had the most involvement by James Cameron, as now he's got his whole and ownership of the franchise back. So that's where we're headed. But, of course, the Sarah Connor Chronicles did that and more on a shoestring budget. And I do believe that's where it was. So, did they ever capture the imagination of the original? In some ways, yes. They relied a little bit too much comedy, and I think that's where they need to get back to that slasher action film mold of the first film. So, do all of these universes exist? Yes, they do. You know why? Because time travel has many paths. So, as much as every time Skynet loses, of course, the future is reset, isn't it? So, all of these are all in the same continuity, no matter what. The Terminator is a fantastic film. If you haven't seen it on the big screen, you need to. If you get a chance to, it is one and an amazing film that you need to really revisit for what it was, which is something that was done in the name of art and something that was amazing. It's 5 out of 5 here on the Hallenbach Scale here at the Lethal Mullet Podcast. Ciao for now.
G'day, folks. Hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsis on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. End Zone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery and, of course, Picard, plus the Orville. Also, the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well. Hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing, The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at there. You can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.